got wide musical tastes and did take up a bit of electric guitar and everything in my teens, because obviously everyone goes through that phase and wanted to be a rock star and everything. That was more the image than actually really wanting to do it. It's also that it's basically you enjoy things you're better at as well. So if I could know I can crack something on the fiddle easier than doing a four chord wonder on the guitar, I kind of tend to lean that way anyway. I suppose it goes down to being quite self-confident and stuff as well, but you know, you see people who played instruments at school who were clearly embarrassed by it as well, who carry their instrument around and kind of be trying to cover it. And then if you own what you do, then it doesn't matter, you know. So I didn't really think about it until later in life about how the music links me to the country and the people on the big social scene there and everything.
This week we interview our first musician, Glasgow-based, Irish-born, fiddle player, teacher and composer, Rowan C. Leslie. Rowan began playing when his mother joined him in learning to play the fiddle when he was age 7. He recounts the experience of growing up in the small village of Brisshane, Northern Ireland, the role of his supportive parents in encouraging his sporting, musical and academic pursuits. We discuss growing up with English parents attending an integrated school in a country historically divided by its religious divide. Rowan explains the draw of the fiddle and traditional music, how it defined his sense of identity, the influential role of his charismatic musical mentor on his journey, and the abundant experience of building his musical network. Rowan also describes his educational experiences, the differences across the traditional music spectrum, the global cultural influence of Irish music, and his traditional music influencers. We discuss the resurgence of interest in traditional music, the impact of the pandemic on himself and other musicians, and expanding his teaching by growing a global network of students. Rowan describes creating his first album, Escaping the Dawn, during lockdown, releasing a book called Contemporary Fiddle Tunes from the Northeast of Ireland, and his hopes of returning to touring during 2021. We get into the evolution of traditional music, the differences in classical and traditional, the impact of AI and technology on music, and the role of serendipity on his journey. Rowan ends the interview by playing a short excerpt from one of his tracks from his new album. I hope you enjoy the insight into the world of traditional music with Rowan C. Leslie. Right, Rowan, welcome to the Impossible Network podcast.
Thank you very much for having me.
It's a pleasure to be. You're our first musician, really, that we've had on the show.
I feel very blessed to be your first.
So we have to give a shout out to the person that recommended you, Scott Duncan, who is a meteorologist, who said we should interview you next. So thank you to Scott.
Indeed, it's always nice to be thought of in any capacity. So thank you, Scott. Hopefully see you soon somewhere along the line.
Before we jump into your life as a fiddle player, a musician, and we get into what, for people who don't know what fiddle is, we always like to start with childhood. And from what I understand, and the accent certainly, you were born in Northern Ireland, brought up and raised in County Antrim in a town called Brisshane. So perhaps you could maybe just talk to us about growing up there. It must be an interesting times, the impact of your parental support and the journey you've taken into music. And maybe just so we'll get into a little bit more detail about your siblings and other influences.
Yes, so I was brought up outside the village of Brisshane. We were in the countryside there. My mum and dad and my brother, who is 2 years older than me. So for a bit of context for your listeners worldwide, so 2 miles outside Brisshane, which is 3 miles from Ballymena, which is the nearest big town, which is famous for being the hometown of Liam Neeson. And Ballymena itself,
everyone knows
is
Liam.
Indeed, the big man himself, you know. And so he's our local claim to fame. And then Ballymena itself is about 30 miles from Belfast. With regards to getting into the music at the start, the village had a local fiddle organisation school that I was taken along to. I've got a brother called Eddie, and he's a couple years older than me, and he started in the clarinet at school. And apparently I wanted to have something to do as well. And you know what siblings were like. And yeah. So wanted to do something. I was drawn to the fiddle, and luckily the school was there as well. So my mum took me down to the local village one Saturday morning, and she also took it up at the same time, which is nice.
Oh, so your parents weren't musicians in the first?
No,
it's often the case.
Yeah, that is quite a thing, especially if people claim big lineage of, you know, especially in traditional music as well. Yeah. The whole family plays. My granddad did this and stuff, you know. Mm. But no, so my parents are not from Northern Ireland anyway, so didn't have the long-term roots there. So
where did they come from?
Both my parents are from London originally.
Okay.
But my dad's been in Northern Ireland over 40 years. Mum's been there over 30, so a long time. But so mum took me down to the local fiddle school and took it up as well. Apparently people like to do things with their kids, so that was one thing that she wanted to do, so that was good. And so we started learning together, and I suppose I excel slightly faster than her, as children can do in these situations. And I suppose in that situation, it's good to have, to be encouraged in something if the parents have a bit of context as well, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, if they're encouraging me to do things, but in a general sense, as parents do, but then I actually have some knowledge of the instrument and stuff as well. I vaguely remember the first day of going down there, we met this woman called Pamela. And I'm not sure if Mum's idea was actually to join at the same time. It was more like she wanted to do it as well. And then she was like, yeah, why not? And then that started off on this path. And I was 7 at the time, so my memory's not the sharpest at that time, but I do vaguely have some recollection of that.
So what about the influence of your mother and father on you? I mean, can you describe the sort of the different characteristics and their influence on you?
They're both quite similar in their academic background themselves, and so I suppose they place a fair amount of emphasis on my schooling and stuff, which is good. And I suppose with Mum then doing the music with me, she was more involved in that side of my extracurricular activities, and then my dad would be more involved in my sporting prowess when it came to that as well. So it's nice to have, I had things in common with both of them, but separately as well, and then overall invested in with my education and stuff.
You must have been born around the time of the peace agreement in Northern Ireland, so a very changing time.
I mean, obviously Northern Ireland's been through an awful lot over the years, and born to be the tail end of the heavy times. But then I suppose with the fact that my parents, well, they would have been there through it, but then not in the midst of it, because not having family ties and the community ties and stuff, so it makes a big difference, you know. And in that respect, it never really affected me, because you're not inside that world really. And I went to an integrated school, which is quite a novelty in Northern Ireland as well. Most schools are either Catholic or Protestant, so, and that kind of obviously takes you off to one side or the other, whether you like it or not, to an extent. And so integrated school, mixture of all faiths and abilities and stuff, you know. And so therefore I've got friends from both sides. And also my parents aren't at all religious either, so weren't going to any churches or anything, which would put you more to the forefront of these things, just inevitably sort of thing. So
it's an interesting sort of thing to reflect on, because I've spent so much time in Northern Ireland and working there and dated someone there as well, and I've got friends both Protestants and Catholics, and really understand the importance of identity, particularly when families have many generations and the sort of the deep-seated beliefs and passions. To have parents that have come from London and growing up in an environment like that, what was your identity like? Did you feel Irish? And also the fact that you've gone into traditional music in itself is interesting, given your own family heritage.
Yeah, I've always seen myself as Irish. As when you're younger, you don't really think about these things at all. I guess you just exist as a kid sort of thing, you know what I mean? Nobody ever really challenged me. I suppose it's more, as I've left Northern Ireland as well, alongside the music, and that is obviously very much part of me, and it's part of myself, and also I suppose if you want to look at it from the other side, it's part of my brand as well, of promoting myself as like a cantantrum Irish musician, doing that sort of thing, especially when I'm away, and that makes more of an impact than being a cantantrum musician in cantantrum as well. But yes, I mean, didn't give it too much thought.
So when I first spoke to you before we got in this interview, you mentioned you were an active and ambitious rugby player. Because if with English parents, if you got to an international stage, that crisis would have come when you'd have to choose Ireland or England, and that would have been a tough one.
I'm sure they would have both been vying, begging me to play for them. Apart from the parental connection, I don't really have much connection to England.
You mentioned the two things. You're seeing your brother playing clarinet and your mother taking you to fiddle. I mean, you must have been sort of fairly curious as a child to go into that, something that it's not your traditional instrument. A lot of kids will go like want to play guitar or maybe even piano, but fiddle. What was it, and where did the curiosity come from?
Yeah, I'm not sure, to be honest. It's I suppose it's always been drawn to it in my core, you know, with these things, because it's always, I obviously wanted to play, and I still remember. There's a certain smell which new fiddles have when you open a case and the mixture of the wood and stuff. And that smell's always stayed with me, as that's what the start of all sort of thing, the kind of mixture of rosin and wood smell and stuff, you know. It's interesting that that's always been my focus, because I've got wide musical tastes, and I've been big into listening to rock music and stuff, and did take up a bit of electric guitar and everything in my teens, because obviously everyone goes through that phase and want to be a rock star and everything, but it's more the that was more the image than actually really wanting to do it. It's also that it's basically you enjoy things you're better at as well. So if I could know I can crack something on the fiddle easier than doing a four chord wonder on the guitar, you kind of tend to lean that way anyway. I suppose it goes down to being quite self-confident and stuff as well. But you know, you see people who played instruments at school who were clearly embarrassed by it as well, who carry their instrument around and kind of be trying to cover it, and then people on the bus be like, oh, what's that, you know?
Yeah.
And then, but if you own what you do, then it doesn't matter, you know? And so I didn't really think about it until later in life, about how the music links me to the country and the people and stuff as well, and the big social scene there and everything. Because obviously once you're seven, you're just going, you're just doing it as you do, you know, you don't really give it any wider thoughts.
When did that sense of identity emerge, when you started to realize that this instrument and this focus on traditional music was defining you as an individual?
I suppose that in my later teens, I started going to, my mum started taking me to kind of pub sessions and stuff, and you kind of see all these old boys playing away and stuff, and they've been doing it for years, and it's how much it means to them, you know, and in the community and stuff, and it's a big part of the social scene. And also it's a big draw to tourism as well and stuff, and people love to come over and hear that and stuff. And you see these people, like usually quite a lot of Americans and people are Germans and stuff in the pub, and they're all totally like amazed by what's happening here, you know.
Yeah.
But to everyone who's there, it's just kind of a way of life, and it's just like just what they've always done. And it's basically that's not a thing to be taken for granted, I guess. That kind of sense of having that kind of strong identity. And I had a good chitter when I was about 13, 14, started going to a local fiddle player for lessons called Johnny Murphy, who is still in Ballymena now, and he teaches and makes fiddles. And as you can see, that one on the wall behind me actually is one he made me for my 21st birthday. Indeed. It was actually made from a sycamore tree in my backyard back home as well. So he took the wood.
How did someone make a fiddle?
It's with a fair amount of hard work. Johnny himself, actually, his uncle taught him his third one he ever made. So that's going to be worth millions down the line, or absolutely priceless, you know. Yeah, you can also see it's varnished, but it's not stained. You know, fiddles are his trademark thing of leaving them kind of light color, which is nice. Mm-hmm. But I started going to Johnny. I was about 14. At that time, I was floating between. I was still doing a bit of traditional stuff, but I was getting classical lessons at school, but I wasn't really into the classical scene, and I didn't really like the orchestral music and everything. I could do it fine at the time, it just wasn't grabbing me, and I didn't really know where I was going with it. And then my mum started taking me to Johnny, who's only 9 years older than me, which isn't a massive gap, you know. So when I met him, he was sort of mid-20s, and was very charismatic and all about the music and stuff. You need someone like that to kind of give you a bit of oomph at times, and it kind of made me fall in love with it more as well. Basically, I went more into the music, and then I started getting involved in the Irish dance music scene as well. Where I go along and play music for all the girls to dance to for days on end, you know.
So, for people that don't know the Irish dance scene, could you maybe describe Irish dancing then? Put that in context.
Cool, yeah. So Irish dancing involves a lot of arms by your side, and it's a mixture of different styles. With you either use heavy shoes where you have all the noise and stuff, which you'd see a lot of in Riverdance, which I'm sure most people have seen. But yeah, that obviously put Irish dancing on the international stage, and that's caused a resurgence in interest in that, and that's still ongoing now. There's loads of spin-offs of those Irish dance shows and stuff, and Irish music and Irish dance as well, and it creates a lot of business, which is great. And so on the smaller level, there's lots of dance schools around the country, and then they have competitions, and they have live music for the competitions. And there I was taken along by Johnny to do these competitions. So I was quite young doing that, and I would just play along in the background, but then a few years later on I was doing it myself and getting paid for it as well, so which is quite a big boost when you're 16 to actually make some money doing something as well. And then you kind of realize then that maybe it's an actual viable source of work as well. Not that being a musician is totally money driven, but it's nice to feel that it is actually, you could get paid to do something, you know, whereas other people at school were doing part-time jobs at McDonald's and stuff and making a lot less money for a lot longer hours than I was getting for a few hours playing the fiddle somewhere, you know, which I enjoyed doing anyway and would be doing regardless of being at the dance festivals or not. So it was really great to get into that world. And like all music things, it's a big social scene, and the dance world's a big social scene as well. Back and forth a lot, still to play for the competitions and stuff, but right now the lack of travel is annoying. And also there's no competitions going on, all events are off as well, so everyone's on a bit of a hiatus. But it's nice, and it shows a clear connection between the music and the dancing, because that's essentially what it's all about as well. And what the music I play is Irish dance music. You've got your jigs, your reels, your hornpipes, it's all based around people dancing to it in different scenarios.
Okay, so before we get into the further definition of Irish music and traditional music, we always try and explore a little bit about the environment or the sort of the feeling of when you were growing up around. Did you have a sense of scarcity or an abundance? And when you talk about going to bars and pubs and playing, it sounds like at a young age you were building a really interesting network, quite an abundant network of people that are in the area that you were focused on. So it sounded like quite a, well, I would say an abundant life growing up in the thing that you loved.
Yes, it's yeah, traditional music is very much it's a social thing, you know, for people and having music in common and stuff. I mean, I don't know the in depths of other musical genres, but I only know what I know with this one. But I feel like there's a lot more crack and hanging out and having a good time and meeting people in this than would be inside classical music, for example, where it's all very performance based. But yeah, so I was an abundance of people to meet, and yeah, and to go into pubs and stuff is great because you meet other people and gives a bit of context, all the rest of it. I feel like I could have done more actually when I was younger, in that age of meeting and being in more organizations. There's a massive musical organization called The Cultus in Ireland, and actually it's worldwide, and they do lots of classes and involve lots of kids and stuff. And I wasn't involved in that when I was younger. I wasn't overly interested in joining that sort of thing, but I feel like I probably should, that would have been good looking back on it now, but I was busy doing lots of other things. But even without that, I was still out and about doing lots of musical things, which then changed when I went to university, but I didn't have that many people around me my own age who played. I've got great friends who I'm still friends with now, but they're all, but they're not through music, they're just through school and other things, you know, so which is, it's also good to have the difference. So, but yeah, so I suppose my musical circle when I was younger was all the older guys, at in these pubs and stuff, which is also good because you can learn from them and you get their stories and their secondhand cigarette smoke and stuff. But which was back in the day before cigarettes were banned. Which is always a funny thing to think about because that wasn't that long ago. But seeing someone smoke indoors now is totally mind blowing. You know, even if it's their own house.
So you attended university in Newcastle where you went to study music, a bit of music and folk and traditional music. Was that by your mentor Johnny, or was it your parents, or you just said, right, this is definitely where my career is going?
It was mostly my mother weighed in on this one. I was at the end of my, come towards the end of my school time, and didn't really know what to do. I was good at English and stuff like that at school, but anyway, my mum found this course and was like, oh, I should do this. And there's a similar one in Limerick, which I also had an offer from, and then in Glasgow there's a course at the RCS here as well. But it was my mother's idea to go for that. I wasn't quite sure about it before I went, sort of thing, or before I auditioned for it. But mum said, it was like, if you get in then and you don't like it, then you can always change course once you're inside university and stuff. That's easier. It's the initial through the door thing, sort of thing, you know. So yeah, then I auditioned and got an offer, which is great, and got my marks, and then set off to pack my bags, went off to Newcastle, all the way to Newcastle. But once I got there, I basically got stuck in, and I sort of fell in love with it all over again, and in more in depth as well. I suppose it was a 4-year course for the first 2 years. You just had to pass, and then the second, the third, and fourth years actually counted, which is my first 2 year bit of a mess around getting that out of my system. I see people do university, too much drinking, not enough studying, etc. Yeah, then I really got knuckled down.
It must have been a bit of a shock to the system to go from the north of Ireland to Newcastle in the north of England, where it's not really, I wouldn't have thought, pubs that were you be able to play in.
Yes, I mean, with the north of England has its own quite renowned type of folk music, but it's different, but it is kind of for that. But then with the degree being there, it's a melting pot of people who come over and then people stay on and stuff, so it develops its own scene just because of the degrees there. And various people would graduate and stay on and everything, so that does give a bit of something. But yeah, it's much more of a mix, whereas because it's more of an international affair, you know.
So when they talk about traditional music, it wasn't just Irish traditional music. Presumably it's traditional music from all genres, all countries.
It was a mixture of Irish, Scottish, English, and I'm pretty sure I had one lecture on Welsh music, which didn't really stick. But yeah, so it was a bit more of a mix. That was part of the draw. I suppose at the time it was more, it would be more of this all Irish sort of thing, which is also good. But also part of the draw going to Newcastle was my brother was in Durham at the time, which is quite nearby, which is nice to have that family connection, even though you're so far from home and all the rest of it. And but yeah, so there's a good scene there. And I mean, it wasn't what was nice, which I didn't really have before with my childhood was having people my own age who had the same interest and everything as well, and that gives a whole new context of having people who are up for the party but also really into the music, and those things kind of go hand in hand. Getting, having good tutors and stuff, I just get more, like most things, the more you do it, the more you want to do it, sort of thing as well.
So give an example of the range of people that were there that you started to study with and play with. What other types of traditional music and instruments were they playing?
There was about, in my year, there's about, the course isn't massive, so there's 18 in my year that starts, and quite a lot of Scottish people had came down, and there's Scott Duncan's brother, so Scott Duncan from before, yeah, his brother, so I met him there. That's Ewan, and he plays the pipes, bagpipes, Highland pipes, and the flute and whistle and stuff. He's very good at all things. And yes, and quite a few English people playing the accordion, and they're singing as well and stuff. And there's a Portuguese guy as well called Miguel, who is really good on the pipes.
And bagpipes?
No, the alien pipes, I think, actually, so Irish pipes. And so it's funny, yeah, I mean, the whole Irish music thing goes all over, and people turn up, have the international thing, because due to Irish history and people going all over and stuff, the music turns up everywhere as well, so you can basically go to any country, city in the world and find a session, which is also quite comforting as well. I feel like it's a local tradition thing, but it's also a worldwide international affair. Yeah, so also, and the course, yeah, so it was a mixture of that, and so it was good, and then you could be, for a different course, for different modules, we have to play together and create bands and everything, so you have to work with the people and try and find, put material together and everything. And like I say, I didn't like all the material we did, as you never would, but then it does give you a taste of these things, and it gives you an opportunity to decide what you do and don't like as well, which is nice. To step outside your own comfort zone and, you know, and like looking at English folk stuff, for example, I didn't think it would be my cup of tea, and I was correct, but at least I can now say with some confidence that I don't really like that area of folk is not really for me, sort of thing, you know? But that's not necessarily a bad thing for other people. But yeah, there'd be more overlap between the Irish and Scottish traditional music, obviously the historical roots and all the rest of it.
So for the uninformed like me, when I heard you were a fiddle player, I just got fiddle, violin, viola. What are the differences? In simple terms,
so the violin and the fiddle are the same thing. Often people say, oh, is a fiddle, is that like a violin but it's smaller? But it's not, it's just the same thing. It's a slang term, and also basically it just defines what type of music you play with it. So you call it a fiddle if you play traditional folk, all that kind of stuff, and basically if you play classical then you call it the violin, but essentially it is the same.
Right.
Same instrument. And then the viola is a bigger version of a violin, which has a lower string and not the top string. Yeah, the fiddle, the violin, all the same thing. It just depends what you're banging out on, essentially.
You mentioned you were drawn in your early teens to being playing a guitar and potentially into that sort of that phase of your rites of passage and wanting to be a rock star. A lot of people will be drawn into things like rock or at that young age. What was it that drew you back to fiddle, apart from just being good at it? Were there any bands, or was it just the music itself that drew you in?
I guess being good at it does definitely help, and be able to do something, and there's so much good traditional music that you can listen to as well, and I suppose as getting to that age we sort of seek things out and everything, and I suppose it's easier to, because I was already better at the fiddle, it's easier to emulate the good things you hear on the fiddle, because I can already play it, you know, and it's easier to pick a piece of music and be able to crack that out, no bother, sort of thing. And there's a lot of great recordings that I would listen to, which basically, I suppose would inspire me to want to play like that, sort of thing.
Who were your influences? I mean, I've heard of bands in Scotland like Capra Ceilidh and the likes, and Clannad and all that seem to be fairly traditional, but were there any sort of defining...
I suppose big fan. There's a great fiddle player called Martin Hayes from County Clare, who's world renowned, and he was I don't play at all like him, but I love his fiddle playing, sort of thing. And people like Frankie Gavin and Liz Doherty, a great Donegal fiddle player who I had a workshop once with.
What was her name?
Liz Doherty. I met her when I was quite young, actually, which I think spurred me on slightly, because she was warm and welcoming and all the rest of it, and like anything, it's nice to be encouraged to do something by somebody who seems to be, lively themselves and stuff, and loves the music. And then Yeah, she then went to university and everything. You basically pick up other people's band choices and stuff, and then it spreads to a lot more. I was very much into, I still am into other genres and everything, but it doesn't necessarily mean, doesn't define what you do. Actually, the last gig that I was at before lockdown, I think, was actually Sum 41, if you know them. No. They're a punk rock band that they're actually the first album I ever bought when I was about 9. And I was over, my brother lives in Amsterdam, and I went over there to see them play there, sort of thing. And they were like, that was like the band of our youth, like our total early youth sort of thing, you know, and we'd never seen them live. And that was a wild gig, and also didn't realize at the time it was going to be the last thing for who knows how long now as well. But there's been definitely some fiddle players. It's always hard to define when it comes to music. Because I mean, playing the fiddle, and I've heard so many fiddle players over the years, some players just totally touch you and move you in a way which is hard to put your finger on. And it doesn't base itself around technical ability. I've heard some fiddle players who are technically amazing, but it leaves me cold, basically. I'm like, that's impressive, but I don't get anything from it, sort of thing. And then other people, it's just like that totally touches your soul or your heart, you know.
So why do you think there's been a resurgence in interest in traditional music?
I think there's always been an interest there. I think there's always been a scene. It's just a case of people have known about it, sort of thing, as well. When people get involved, and I've seen this happen from my side when I've got some pupils who are my age or older who take up the fiddle, and then I introduce them to bands and events and gigs and stuff, and they start going to these things, and there's a whole new kind of social live music world that was going on like under their nose without them even knowing, sort of thing. That definitely helps, because it makes it seem more official as well. Like, it's an actual subject you can go on and study. It makes it seem like it's definitely a path you can make a career out of, as opposed to it just being some old boys in the pub smashing out a few tunes on the weekends, you know. It puts it different, which is obviously totally part of it, but there's more to it than that. The music's cool if people listen to it as well. Basically, that sounds really naff to say, but it's a cool thing to be involved with, you know. And like in anything, I guess, if certain people start doing it, then people want to be like them, and that carries on as well.
So you've developed a reputation as a player, a composer, a teacher, and you've appeared in a movie, you've toured Europe, you've played the festivals, you've now got Building This Life in Glasgow. But how have you managed to cope in the last year with the pandemic and the impact it's had on you and other musicians? Because, I mean, it's the life and the way that you thrive off the music is presumably in live experiences, and that's been taken away from you. So how's it been?
Yeah, it's been essentially pretty terrible for everyone in this boat, all those performance things. Just the drop of live gigs. I obviously do a lot of gigs and even a lot of like weddings and events and that sort of things, which are good earners and stuff. They're all being pushed back and or just totally cancelled and stuff. It's been a massive change, and I can't feel too bad for myself because everyone's in the same boat at the same time. So woe is me is kind of a thing you have to get over, because it's not like everyone else is getting the work and you're not, sort of thing, but as everyone's just waiting. But yeah, no, it's been terrible for everybody. And I suppose I do teaching as well, so I've just moved that onto Zoom or other online platforms, which
and that's working.
It's grand. I mean, it's not ideal, and but I have pushed further afield with my advertising, so I've now got pupils a bit further afield. So I've got a girl in Spain who I teach, which is good, which I wouldn't have had otherwise if I wasn't kind of pushing further afield, because some people don't like getting taught online, so therefore they may live in Glasgow but don't want to come around, but don't want to get lessons for now. So that's the same, this whole 2D thing, etc. And but most people are online for now, but we'll come back in if they live nearby whenever it is safe to do so.
So when you say you expanded your advertising, where do you advertise?
I don't know if you have. Do you have Gumtree in America?
Oh yeah.
So I know what it is. Yeah. You wouldn't think that's a good one for advertising lessons, but I think it's just because it's quite a big site in itself. So therefore, people Google things, it will come up at the top. Then I have my own website and various other kind of music teacher pages and stuff. And yeah, there's an American page on now and stuff, which is basically just one thing that are high up on Google. Essentially, that people can Google fiddle lessons, you're like a top pick sort of thing.
I mean, we've all seen these multiple screens of musicians and singers jamming together on Zoom. Have you done any live performances, either yourself or other musicians?
Well, those things you see aren't actually live, just to blow the bubble there, burst bubble there, because you know, the whole lag time stuff. I'd be running a Zoom session actually, so it's trying to emulate what it's like to go to the pub and have a tune, sort of thing. But it's a pale comparison, but it's good in its Zoom way. But in which case I send out music and everyone kind of practices it, and then on Wednesday night Everyone comes on together and we kind of play through the tunes and everything together. Muted except myself, because in an ideal world, internet was fast enough, we'd all play together in our separate houses and work countries, but we could all hear each other and that'd be nice. But for now, everyone just plays and hears me, sort of thing. But you get the nice sense of community because you can see everyone on screen and you can have a bit of chat before and after and all the rest of it, and it's nice of that. And obviously right now, people are just keen to do anything as well, to have some sort of musical input or output, and also learn some new material and stuff like that. So that's going quite well. I've got a guy in Montana now on the Zoom session, actually, which is quite cool. So he was showing us out his window last night, so we could see. It looks very, he's got a bright red barn and stuff. It's like what you imagine Montana to be like, mountains and red barns. And he was talking about the snow and that. But I've kind of avoided playing too many streaming things. Despite the pandemic, I actually managed to bring out my latest album during it. And or record it anyway. I started recording this album last March and then had to take a big hiatus. The studio opened again in August, so got the guys in to do it again there, and then released it in December there. So it's everywhere.
And it's on Spotify.
Yeah, Spotify, iTunes. It's called Escaping the Dawn, and it's a great album, if I say so myself.
Yes, I had a listen to it the other day.
Oh, good. Any particular favourite tracks?
Yeah, it was the second track on I liked.
Papa's Jigs?
Yeah, that's it. Papa's Jig, number one.
Yes, great. Yeah, so that was, I wrote those two first tunes for my dad's birthday a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And that was his 70th, I believe. And then the last tune on that is called Jess the Wise, which is for my dog back home, Cocker Spaniel, the family dog, Jess. So she's a wee darling, and usually I see her quite a lot, but I haven't seen her in quite a while now. But she's a... 12 or something now, quite old, but you wouldn't think it. You know, I don't know if you have any experience with spaniels, but they're all very bouncy and that, you know. Ah, very good.
Two cocker spaniels.
You know the crack then. You know what they're like. Oh, beautiful animals. Yeah. And so she has earned herself a good chin name. But yeah, so it's good to, but despite all this problems, I still managed to get the album out, and then you take it on the road a bit, you know, to promote it and stuff. So I'm still planning to do that in the summer, hopefully. Do a few gigs over here and also back home in Ireland as well. And maybe further afield, but just waiting to get the nod on venues to be like, yes, we can actually take you now, you know. So I've got a few things penciled in, and then I also managed to release a book this year as well, which is good, called Contemporary Fiddle Tunes from the Northeast of Ireland, which is published by Melbay, which is an American publisher now.
We'll put that in the show notes.
good, yeah, everyone get their copies.
Yeah.
And that was great. So that was actually a project which took about 2 years to complete. It was the northeast of Ireland, which is where I'm from, is not an area that's overly famous for the traditional music. When people think of Ireland, they think of Donegal and Sligo and Clare and those sort of places, which are kind of famous for the traditional music. But there is obviously players everywhere. It's just one of those things, recording to get picked up and stuff. The big thing with Sligo playing was with Michael Coleman, who's a famous fiddle player. He went over to New York, I think, and was one of the first people to record in the 20s. And his style of music was the first thing anyone really heard. And then... because that's kind of the first thing people deem that to be, like, that's what Irish traditional music is, but there's also a massive breadth inside that, you know. So anyway, I thought it'd be good to do a book to highlight the local players, highlight some local players and some self-penned tunes by those people as well. So so the book is by no means extensive. It's not, there's obviously thousands of tunes written by people from the area over the how many years, but it's just a kind of snapshot of some people who are, nearly everyone who's in the book is still alive today or just recently deceased. So it's quite a modern take on people's tunes.
I'm intrigued because the word traditional, it takes you back to the heritage of a nation and its core, the core of its culture. But you're creating music today, and presumably people that are making traditional music today, contemporary traditional music, how different is it? How is it evolving with the times?
Well, I suppose the thing which makes it traditional still, even though if you're doing it right now or these contemporary tunes, it's inside the structures, so you're still writing tunes. The music is based around your Irish dance music, so your jigs, your reels, your hornpipes, things like that, which are all to do with, have certain structures, basically, which I'll not go into, but then if you write tunes inside those structures, they follow those patterns, and even though they're modern, they're still laid out in a traditional way, shall we say.
Yeah.
So that's how I would say, so it makes it traditional music. But these days, everyone's always vying. Well, I'm sure it's always gone on, but then it's just continued, but people are always vying to do new and innovative things with something which has been done before, you know. And so you do have bands once again, it's not really a new thing, but with having kind of different instrumentations, so it involved like more rock band setups and stuff as well, with guitars and drum kits and basses and all that kind of stuff. And there's fair amounts of things which use jazz influences as well. You get like big brass sax sections and stuff as well. And there's quite a lot of things. I would say my experience now being over here in Glasgow, there's a fair amount of electronic fusion stuff as well now, more so over here than back home. And I suppose for me, it's how far do you take the music away from the traditionalness before it's not related to anything at all, really, you know? It's not necessarily a bad thing. It just becomes its own thing, I guess, you know? And for my own album and stuff, you can obviously it's arranged different parts and it kind of goes a bit weird at times and stuff, but you can always pick out where the tune is. That's a reel, that's a jig, that's a hornpipe, that's a polka, that sort of thing, which is kind of, and therefore you could, I like to think that those tunes could be played at a session somewhere along the line as well. They could be easily learned by somebody and taken. That's kind of what you want as well. You want to be able to play your music and stuff. I feel like with bands and stuff, if they kind of arrange and rearrange their music too much, it kind of gets the traditionalness, the essence of it kind of gets lost within that, you know? Mm-hmm. And
so when you talk about the structures inside it that define the genre of traditional, are those structures the same for Scottish traditional music, English, Welsh, and
yes, if you're playing a jig or a reel or any kind of dance tune, the structures are the same. You'll have the same time signature and the same number of bars and the same sort of rhythmic pattern. And yeah, that's also pretty much the same with the, I'm not sure what's going on in Wales right now, but yeah, by and large, definitely between Scotland and Ireland, those things are all kind of the same. In England and stuff, there's different sort of tune types as well that I wouldn't really do. They have things called rants and stuff like that, which I'm not quite sure what those are about. But yeah, but essentially it's all the same structure all over inside the kind of Celtic thing.
I don't really understand. I've got no knowledge of the sort of the going all the way back where the evolution of traditional music came from versus classical.
That's a good question. I mean, they are totally different things. The fact that the fiddle violin is used in both, I guess, it's just people will just play what they know. So whenever the first person got a fiddle in Ireland and a violin in Ireland, they play what they knew, which are these tunes that they would deal out, sort of thing. There's a big thing with in Irish music as well about of lilting things. So you don't even need an instrument to do the tunes. You just go a-bee-tee-pa-tee-ta-pa-tee-tee-pa-tee-tee-pa-tee. Obviously a bit better than that, but that's our idea. You know, you kind of emulate the instrument just with your mouth, you know, and yeah, so I guess it's just a case of they don't really come together. I'm guessing people would use the violin a lot earlier in different places. I'm not sure when the first fiddle came to Ireland, you know, but then it was adopted and then made into its own thing.
Yeah, it's interesting. Looking forward, I mean, you mentioned technology. How do you see traditional music evolving? I mean, every industry, every category, every career is going to be impacted by artificial intelligence and technology over the next 10, 20 years. Do you see any evidence or have any sense of the impact something like that will have on the creation of music?
In this pandemic, I can still do some work with teaching online and stuff. The fact that that's even a possibility is great. I mean, obviously the quality of recordings is getting better as well, like studio albums and stuff, and even the case of there's so many people now doing like home studio setups and everything, which has been handy in this situation because people do more stuff from home. I'm not overly technology gifted, so I don't have too much of that stuff. I prefer just to pay someone else to record me when the time comes and then not to worry about the rest of the time, you know. But yes, I mean, I'm not sure about the artificial intelligence aspect of it. When I was thinking about music is a very human thing, I guess, so I'm not sure how artificial intelligence could play a role in that any sense, really, you know. But then
I suppose myself and my partner, we develop websites, and we've had so many conversations that, you know, you'll get to a point where you can create artificial intelligence that will code sites. I mean, already there's a technology called GPT-3, and it might be 4 now, that you can input into GPT-3 a piece of text and it will generate a blog post for you based on what you've written about, and you wouldn't know that it wasn't written by a human. So presumably it's not beyond the bounds of possibility to be able to sample a piece of traditional music and the AI will be able to generate different creations. Yeah, so I think that's because I think I totally agree with you. I don't think we can ever sort of replicate the pure creativity and imagination of humans. Certainly not, I don't think, in the next 10, 20 years. Mm. But I was interested to see if you could see any evidence
emerging. Yeah, I suppose it's interesting the fact you said that about the coding. It will kind of write it for you once you start, sort of thing. Because, like we said, there's very clear structures inside traditional music of which tunes are based. And therefore, if you put that into a computer, it could probably crack out like a million reels that are different, that are probably good, etc. You know, following those structures, sort of thing. So, yeah, I mean, that's all, yeah. I suppose that physically that could be a thing.
But what you wouldn't be able to replicate is getting around a fire in a pub with other human beings.
Indeed. and also basically also the music that you write and this sort of thing, people like a bit of a story behind why it was written and stuff like that. Mm. You know, if you're just like, oh yeah, the computer cracked it out there and it's in a millisecond, it's not quite the same story to talk about, you know. It's you gotta lose a bit of something. And it's one of those things that's, yeah, I think a lot about technology these days in a general sense of how far do things have to get. Technology being, you'd think, is there to make life better and easier and all the rest of it. How far do these things go before it becomes kind of soulless or detrimental to actually being a person as well? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's and this is also very clear, but everyone doing these like online events right now, like Zoom quizzes and stuff, you know, it's just it's not a substitution for actually meeting someone in real life and actually going out and actually having a life, you know. I mean, it's obviously good that you can do it in the meantime, you know, and then all that kind of stuff. And obviously, obviously the whole social media thing is good to an extent, but also detrimental in so many ways as well. So it's kind of the case of how far do you take these things? And we feel like development is never going to stop, though, in any sense, and because it's always people striving for these things. But it's I started to sound like I'm really old, but you know, back in my day, it was all you kind of feel like it's been, yeah, things are more personal, and you just gain more from life and actually dealing with people and stuff. And I feel like during this has been a lot more. It's obviously been being in this time as well, and you can't travel and see family and all the rest of it. It flies up a lot more, and you take these things for granted and all the rest of it. But and also during this time, technology people appreciate that they should really get out and have a life, etc., whenever they can, you know. And you know, all that, you kind of look back on all those times that you thought, oh, could go out tonight, but I might just stay in and watch something, and then you realize that all you do now is stay in and watch something, and you should have taken all those opportunities to go and get pints, like, you know. But
but these times will pass.
Yeah.
Before we get into quickfire questions, where has serendipity played a part in your journey into music? Is there anything, any moment or experience or connection that you go, that was...
I would just say just the bit at the very, very start, the fact that it was a good fortune I took up an instrument that I liked from the get-go, and that's led on to essentially an entire life as well, you know, and it's taken me places and I've met people and stuff. And there's been times, I remember a few years ago, I was due to the... my connection with the Irish dance world. I was in Spain doing this small festival. So it was a group of the girls were dancing and I was asked to put together a small band for it. So I took two friends from university who are in a band called Elephant Sessions, in case they want a wee shout out.
And, how'd you spell that?
Elephant Sessions.
Oh.
And they're doing very, very well themselves right now. And so I took two of those guys with me and we were sat... just like we're sat at like 2 a.m. in this idyllic Spanish square somewhere, just having beers after the show. And it was just, you know, what it's like over there, the weather just, it never gets cold, so you can sit outside all night, sort of thing. And it's Spain, so everyone's really nice, etc., and the beer's great, etc. And I was just having a really nice time and out with my friends and all the rest of it. And I was just like, I'm only here having this experience because I can make this bit of wood make an okay noise some of the time, essentially, you know. That's what it comes out to, you know. It's always nice to have a moment of reflection where you realize that the steps you've taken have led you to a place which is nice. It's nice to take a moment to stop, take really, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I guess, yeah, just the good fortune of having something. And I mean, all musical fields are saturated, but then I certainly feel like it's like getting into the fiddle young is probably better than getting into the electric guitar young, you know, really, because that's so many more people want to be, that kind of thing. And yeah, it's hard to make, yeah, for example, like you can make money in traditional music at a certain level, and then obviously it grows as well, but if you don't make any money in rock music or those sort of fields until you're absolutely famous, you know what I mean, as well. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just playing backdoor clubs that no one's going to pay for any sort of thing, you know, until you get to be, you know, the Chili Peppers or whatever, like, you know. So it's there's a way bigger gap there. So whereas in traditional music, I find quite young age, you can make money in the middle area as well, you know, which is good. As a kind of, it does seem like it could be a livelihood as well as being something that you love to do.
Okay. Well, quick for our questions. What principles do you stand by?
Do what makes you happy. As at the end of the day, that's all that really matters.
Okay. What are the hard choices you had to make that might have been tough but turned out to be the right decision?
I think the decision to move to Glasgow actually after university was a tough one. I was considering moving back to Ireland, doing something like there, and at that stage didn't really have any draws anywhere particular, so I was just making a big leap and hoping that you could always go somewhere and not like it and then move away again. It's grand, but it was quite a big decision, and it's paid off because the city's great and I've managed to build a life for myself as well, all the while being not too far from home as well, which is handy.
Outside of COVID, where'd you go to discover new ideas?
I would say just being out and about in the general world. I find ideas do not come when I'm sat staring at a blank page or the computer screen or staring at my fiddle sort of thing. When it comes to composing and stuff, I definitely write a lot more when I've been out and about doing literally anything. Yeah, I mean, things come to you. And also that kind of stuff, you can't really force it as well. You just have to let things come. But I feel like just being out and hearing people and meeting people and experiencing life just creates things to flow.
Okay. What's one problem worth solving?
Pollution.
Okay. Yeah. Climate, yeah. You've got an opportunity, people from history, around to dinner, to help you plan for a better future. Who would those four people be?
Some generic answers for you, but I've got how about Martin Luther King, Steve Jobs, Charles Darwin, and Prince?
Oh, right. Well, I reckon you would be doing a little performance with Prince at the end of the night.
Indeed. He was a wild one. So plus he just about going to the bracket of history there. So
yeah, that's a good one. Okay, is there a question that no one asks you that you wish they would?
This is more of a lighthearted one. What is my skincare routine? So, nobody ever asked me how I look like this, you know.
Okay. What or who has made you reevaluate yourself?
So that moment when you try and pet a dog and it doesn't come to you. I'm always kind of a few seconds after that, I always wonder like what was wrong with me, and I have to take a bit of soul search in there. So whenever that happens, I think I always have to slightly reevaluate.
Never had that one before. Okay. Impossible question. So someone that you meet that's about to graduate, so study, that's maybe got a musical or other dream, ambition, goal, but it's been told that forget it, it's impossible.
I suppose it's a bit of a cliche, but you know, nothing is impossible, and people are only people, so if someone else can do it, you can do it as well. And if no one else has done it, then you can be the first.
Nice. Okay. Come out of lockdown. Now, I know you'll be straight probably in some nice bar playing the fiddle with probably a band, but if you had to go to a karaoke, what would you be singing?
Probably Wonderwall by Oasis. It's always a classic. And a crowd pleaser, you know, so.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I'd be alongside.
Good job, great taste.
A recent film, series, documentary that you've seen during lockdown that you would recommend someone watch?
I recently got a free subscription to Disney Plus and watched Soul. Have you seen Soul?
No.
It's a animated Disney film recently, but it's by a jazz musician in New York, based around that anyway, and that kind of thing. But it's Jamie Foxx doing the voice for it. And I'm a big fan of the kind of animated stuff anyway.
Yeah.
Because they're always like beautifully made and stuff. And it's very well done and very touching as well, and fun and kind of witty and stuff. So I recommend that one anyway if you haven't seen it.
Put that on the list, okay. We like to offer listeners to come up with good comments on the website or the comment section in Instagram. A book, what would you recommend?
An Equal Music by Vikram Seth.
Okay.
A good read, and music based as well. So that ties into something. Everything.
Okay, final question. Who should we interview next?
I've got a few people in the pipeline. I don't want to give any names yet in case they don't pan out. But I did do a 6-month tour in a traveling circus. So I think,
whoa.
So I think a person maybe linked to that might come through for me.
Okay, that would be very interesting. Right. Well, before you go, could you give us a little sample of something from your latest album?
Oh, sure, why not? Well, I should have a fiddle lying right here somewhere. Here's one I prepared earlier. Yeah. I find my composing and stuff is quite influenced by titles that are named after animals and stuff. So this is a tune called The Linnet. It's a small sort of red-chested bird that occasionally we see back home. So it's a tune called The Linnet, which features on the latest album, Escape from the Dawn.
Okay. Wow.
There we are, The Linnet.
Very cool.
Thank you very much.
Okay, well, that was wonderful. And if someone wants to get and listen to Escaping the Dawn, they just go to Spotify?
Yep, Spotify, Bandcamp, iTunes, all the usual platforms. It's everywhere. Uh-huh. Easily found.
Or on your website.
Yep, rowanleslie.co.uk. It can be found there as well, along with the book, Contemporary Fiddle Tunes from the Northeast of Ireland.
Okay, and if people want to follow you on Instagram, where did they find you?
Rowan Leslie Music on Instagram and Rowan Leslie Fiddle on Facebook.
Okay, well, that's great. Well, Rowan, I just want to thank you for your time. I really appreciate it and acknowledge you just for your creativity and clearly curious mind and with, I suspect, a very interesting future of creation ahead of you in traditional music. And I'm sure a lot of people will be inspired to listen to what you've done and
hope so.
follow you in the future. So thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Okay.
Take care. Thanks, man. Bye-bye.
Okay, that's all for this week, folks. If you're enjoying the show, please subscribe, rate, recommend, or review, depending on where you listen. And if you have someone you'd like us to interview, just DM us on Instagram at The Impossible Network or email us at info@theimpossiblenetwork.com. And please give our other podcast, The Raw Hospitality Show, a listen. They are both Fabrica Collective Productions. See you next time.